Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to today's edition of Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up, a historic moment as an Eritrean delegation visits Ethiopia for the first time in 20 years, aiming to end decades of conflict and hostility. We hear from an expert on Ethiopia.
This is a breakthrough moment. It's a very high-ranking delegation. We gather that it's been met with flags and banners, which is an important symbol of conciliation and friendliness.
And Zimbabwe parties signed peace pledge ahead of July general elections as opposition calls for respect of that accord.
I hope that message goes out, in particular to the police and to supporters of all political parties who have an inclination to actions which inhibit the freedom of others.
We will also hear about the ongoing migration crisis here in Europe.
Yeah, you're right, Isaac. We have a lot lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. South Sudan President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have struck a partial peace deal on ending the country's civil war. During talks in neighboring Sudan, the country's foreign minister said some points of agreement were made and that terms of the deal would be announced tomorrow. The two warring leaders have signed multiple deals over the past few years, all of them ending in failure. Meanwhile, a UN peacekeeper was killed in an ambush on Tuesday in the western part of the country. German Chancellor Angela Merkel held talks in Berlin with Spain's newly elected Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, with bilateral talks focused on finding a solution on the EU-wide migration dilemma. Merkel said that progress had been made, but that more time would be needed to reach a full agreement. Sanchez, meanwhile, expressed optimism and vowed to work closely with Germany.
The only way to respond to immigration is through a common European approach.
An EU summit focusing on the issue is due at the end of the week. Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said the German rescue ship Lifeline would dock in Malta. Malta confirmed the news, saying they would also take in some of the migrants as well. The Maltese government added that Italy, France, and Portugal would also house the mostly African migrants. The captain of the ship, Klaus-Peter Reich, said the migrants have been waiting patiently.
The migrants are very cooperative, and they also helped us clean the bathrooms, the decks, and elsewhere. The situation is quiet at the moment. We have water, food, and people are quiet because they feel safe on this boat.
The charity vessel rescued over 200 migrants last Thursday. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Eritrean officials have arrived in Ethiopia for the first peace talks between the bordering countries in 20 years. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed received Eritrean Foreign Minister Osman Sali and others for a scheduled dinner due later tonight. Eritrea's longtime president Isaias Afwerki noted positive signals in the run-up to the talks and said he would plan future steps on ending the bloody war that has left thousands of people dead. Elsewhere, a Norwegian NGO has warned of a dire situation in northeastern Nigeria, saying thousands of men, women, and children made homeless by Boko Haram risk disease ahead of the rainy season. The Norwegian Refugee Council said they were extremely concerned and overwhelmed by the situation as large-scale displacements continue due to increased militant fighting this year. And finally, in World Cup football news, Peru beat Australia 2-0. Denmark and France ended in a goalless draw. And later tonight, Nigeria takes on Argentina. Iceland plays against Croatia. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We begin the program in Ethiopia, where a high-level delegation from Eritrea made a rare visit for the first time in 20 years, raising hopes of ending decades of hostility and conflict between the two countries.
Hopes of better relations were revived when the new Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed pledged to honor the 2000 deal, prompting today's visit by the Eritrean delegation. I talked to Mikael Rong, an author and journalist with vast experience on these two countries, and she starts by telling us what today's meeting implies.
This is a breakthrough moment. It's a very high-ranking delegation. We gather that it's been met with flags and banners, Eritrean flags, welcoming banners, and the Ethiopian Prime Minister went to the extent of sending a message in Tigrinya to President Isaias Afwerki of Eritrea, which is an important symbol of conciliation and friendliness.
So in your view, what does this meeting imply?
Well, I think that we've got Ethiopia and the new prime minister are very, very anxious to see change. Abiy is under a lot of political pressure from dissent in the Oromo and the Amhara communities. I think that there's been a lot of diplomatic pressure also on the Ethiopians because there's been growing worry and concern abroad in the EU and also in Washington at the continuing no war, no peace situation. There are also solid commercial and economic reasons to tackle the problem between the two countries, because as long as you have that border undemarcated, nobody wants to invest in two countries which they think could return to war at any moment.
So one of the reasons the Eritrean government recruited young men into the military or the national service was because they foresaw a possible threat from Ethiopia due to the border conflict. Do you think this is likely to change now?
I think that's a really big question. There's going to be a lot of pressure for reform on Isaias Afwerki if this border process continues in its current direction, because doing open-ended military service was something he could justify on the grounds that there were Ethiopian troops in occupation of Eritrean territory. If that that threat disappears, then people will be saying, why are you sending all these young men and women off to do a military service? And by the way, why have we not enacted the multi-party constitution? Why haven't we implemented it? Why are there no political parties allowed inside Eritrea? Why don't we have a free press? So there are a lot of consequences that will follow on a normalization of relations between the two countries. They may not be immediate, but they will certainly be there. And I'm sure that the delegation turning up in Addis will be aware of all of those issues.
That's Mikael Rong, an author and journalist who has covered the conflict between the two countries for years.
Now, on our Facebook page, DW Africa, we asked, could this mark a new chapter for both Ethiopia and Eritrea after many years of frosty relations? And some of you have been sending your thoughts.
Yeah, very positive comments here from Mohamed Hashi, who says, well done. I like this young, energetic leader, Dr. Abiy. He will be remembered for his hard work. I urge his people to stand with him.
And Akol Ochiba says peace must continue to reign in the world, starting from Africa. Nice step for both countries.
Yeah, that's surely a nice step. So keep giving us your comments. And now we come back here to Europe, where migration continues to dominate the headlines here and beyond. Today, a rescue ship stranded in the Mediterranean with more than 200 migrants on board was finally allowed to dock in Malta, as European Union states remain at loggerheads over how to handle the influx of people trying to reach the continent.
Now, on the other hand, the Austrian far-right interior minister has opted to deploy police, soldiers and Black Hawk military on its border with Slovenia in an exercise designed to show its preparedness for any repeat of Europe's migration crisis. More on this ongoing crisis with Marie Sina.
Italy is once again pushing Europe to take a tougher stance on immigration as it turned away a rescue ship run by the German mission Lifeline. Earlier today, the ship received permission to dock in Malta, with Italy agreeing to take in some of the migrants on board. Hardline Interior Minister Matteo Salvini is now aiming to cut off the flow of migrants before they are even put to sea. Speaking during his visit in Libya, Salvini called for reception centers to screen arrivals in neighboring Chad, Niger, and Sudan.
The Italian government will support the need to protect the external borders south of Libya, because Libya and Italy alone cannot sustain the economic and social costs of this immigration.
Amid the European migration dilemma, there seems to be no solution in sight. German Chancellor Merkel said at a press conference with Spanish Prime Minister Sanchez today that a complete agreement on a joint migration policy may take some time.
As I already said on Sunday, and as we have known for a long time now, there will not be a solution for the entire asylum package by Friday. The good news is that five directives have been agreed on. The not so good news is that we still have to work on two directives.
Merkel explained that the main points of contention are the processing of asylum application as well as the Dublin regulation, which calls for migrants to seek asylum in their first country of arrival.
That's Marisina with that report.
Now, let's go back to Africa for a while. Zimbabwe's presidential candidates and political parties have signed a peace pledge to hold peaceful campaigns ahead of next month's general elections. The leaders also condemned the blast explosion that rocked President Emmerson Mnangagwa's rally over the weekend, killing two of his security officers.
Elections in Zimbabwe have often been overshadowed by violence, including murder and abductions that the opposition and rights groups say have mostly targeted opposition supporters and have been carried out by the ruling party members and state security agencies. From Harare, our correspondent Privilege Mushaniri has more.
Those are the 23 presidential candidates' representatives making a commitment to uphold peace in the building up to next month's polls. Zimbabwe's elections have been in the past marred by violence which killed hundreds of opposition supporters. There are also looming fears after weekend's bomb blast at a political rally addressed by President Mnangagwa, who escaped unhurt. The ruling party, ZANU-PF, has been accused as the major cause of such conflicts. However, its Secretary-General, Obed Mpofu, says that was the past and they are now ready to turn over a new leaf.
We've been a pariah state for a long time where such freedoms were not experienced by some people wanted to participate in politics. We are now open for a democratic plebiscite where everyone who thinks he can lead this process is free to do so.
Although opposition leader Professor Welshman Ngwe of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance Coalition welcomed the move, he says the government has to deal with past perpetrators accused of political violence during elections.
We are committed to ensuring that we have a peaceful election. I hope that message goes out, in particular to the police, to the Central Intelligence Organization and to the army. And to supporters of all political parties who have an inclination to actions which inhibit the freedom of others.
It's a move which has also been welcomed by local and international organizations. The European Union ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philippe Van Dem, says the electoral body should be transparent to cast doubt on voting irregularities which may fuel mistrust.
It is a task of all stakeholders, starting with the political leadership across the board, to reassure the voters that intimidation in any form will not be tolerated. That's the meaning of peace in times of elections.
The upcoming elections are key for Zimbabwe's democracy and the re-engagement with the international community after 20 years of isolation under former President Robert Mugabe.
That's our correspondent, Privilege Mushaniri.
And to World Cup that is taking place in Russia, France and Denmark played out the first goalless draw of the World Cup after a dire encounter in Moscow. As France topped the group ahead of the Danes, Australia missed the chance to go through, losing to Peru in Sochi. Later, it will be the much-awaited game between Nigeria's Super Eagles and Argentina.
And of course, most of you have been sending us your predictions. Continue to do so on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yeah, and of course, the debate. Keep the debate flowing. Many of you are saying 2-1, 1-0 in favor of Super Eagles. Let's wait and see and enjoy.
Welcome back to the program with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Nigeria Super Eagles will be taking on Argentina in a do-or-die game. The fans of the Super Eagles are ecstatic, like this one.
We are very sure of winning this game. We have Mohamed Musa is going to do wonders today. Expect to see Nigerians getting out as victors.
Also on the program, we will be hearing how the Democratic Republic of Congo is one of the countries in the world with big numbers of children conscripted in the army and militia groups. But of course, first to sports and now to the big game. Nigeria Super Eagles are bidding for a place in the last 16 at the ongoing World Cup tournament in Russia. But they face an uphill task of overcoming a determined Argentina side that will be all out for a win.
Yes, yes, indeed, Zipporah. The Argentinian pack will be led by none other than Lionel Messi and Sergio Aguero, but must beat Nigeria or they are out of the tournament. Now, shortly before we came on air, I spoke to DW Samson O'Malley, who is in Russia, St. Petersburg, ready to give us all the action about the match. And of course, he caught up with some fans. Listen to them.
We are very sure of winning this game. We have Mohamed Musa is going to do wonders today. Expect to see Nigerians getting out as victors.
All right.
Yes.
I got this young man here. I think he's a teenager. What's your name?
Fernando. Fernando, where are you from?
Argentina.
Argentina. Who do you think is going to win today?
Argentina.
Argentina, why?
Because he's the best.
He's the best?
Messi.
But he has not been scoring.
He will score today.
He will score today.
Okay, so that's another teenager. I also got another young man with me here. What's your name?
Milton, who is going to win today's game?
Argentina.
Why do you think it's Argentina?
It's because Messi.
Well, Messi has not been scoring in this World Cup.
No, but today he's going to have a goal match.
Okay. He says today he's going to have a goal in the game. So that's the atmosphere here. I also have another man here. He's sporting a Nigerian jersey. Sir, are you from Nigeria?
Yeah, Nigeria from Lagos.
Oh, from Lagos. Who do you think is going to win today's game?
We are carrying the day.
How so are you? Because, I mean, you're playing Argentina. You have Aguero. You have Mascherano. You have Angel Di
Maria. No. It's not about name.
Okay.
What I observe is that presently the Nigeria team, the spirit is high in the camp already. And I don't really see anything special in Argentina team. They just have name, no teamwork.
Okay.
And football is not about name, it's about the teamwork.
Okay.
So definitely Nigeria is going to carry the day. I have the assurance and confidence in those players.
All right, I wish your team the very best.
Yeah. And I have some people who...
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm waiting for the ticket of the Argentina Nigeria. I need tickets.
Oh, you want a ticket for them?
Yes.
Who do you think is going to win?
I think that we'll win Argentina, obviously. 1-0.
1-0.
All right, Isaac, that's the mood here. A lot of people are excited. I can tell you fans have taken over virtually all the... every part of this stadium. They will not be allowed in until the next 2 hours officially, but I can tell you that you have more Argentinian fans, at least for now, from here. I'm hoping that the Nigerian fans will be able to come in and they'll also be able to support their team. Isaac?
Now, Samson, I just heard you had quite a good mix of fans there, excited, you know, anxiously waiting for the match between Nigeria and Argentina. From your assessment, the Super Eagles have lost 4 World Cup games with Argentina in the past. Do you think they will carry the day like the fans have been telling us?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the statistics, obviously it's not in favor of the Super Eagles. Everything is working in the advantage of the Argentinians. But again, if you look at this particular World Cup, you have the likes of Lionel Messi, who had not come to the party, as some people will say. You also have Angel Di Maria. You have Mascherano. You have all the big names there. But if you look at it, if at all that team is in place and is doing so well, they shouldn't be in the kind of precarious situation they are right now, where they are fighting and calculating, hoping that the game between Croatia and Iceland go either way, have some points, and be able to beat Nigeria in order to get a bye into the second round. Yesterday at the press conference, when Garrett Rowe, the coach of the Super Eagles, was speaking to the press, he did say that, he does have a young team, but again, that will work to his advantage, even though they will be playing against a very, very experienced side. He's confident that the boys and, of course, the formation he's going to bring to bear later this evening will be able to give him some positive results.
Well said, Samson. Thank you very much for that. Now, so today, like the Nigerians say, Zipporah, will it be Nigeria or Argentina? Will it be Musa the Super Eagles hero or Messi, the king of soccer in Argentina?
Yeah, that's the big question.
Anyway, they're going to be locking horns. And we asked you, what advantage does one team have over the other? Nigeria or Argentina? Zibi, please.
And of course, Mamadou Saliba says, I am in for the Super Eagles. They will come up with a positive result. Believe it.
Someone called God's Praise Orok says, it's going to be a showdown. Since we won at our last meeting, the friendly, we hope to continue the string of triumph.
And people are very positive. Luis Ejim says, outright win for the Eagles. My prediction is 2-1. For the Super Eagles.
And someone called Ice Cream. What a name. It's a good one.
That's a good one.
Say they should have played their friendly match with Israel. The blessings would have been enormous.
For sure.
A bit cryptic.
Yeah. Joseph Ebodo says, DW Africa, Musa will outshine Messi today.
And the comments are streaming in by the minute. Musa Dembele says, it is Musa's day. Messi seems to have a headache because scared of mighty Musa. I think that's because of the picture that, you know, we posted on our Facebook page showing Messi kind of facing the ground. And our usual contributor, Ehoza Godwin, says, I'm really scared of the turnout. Oh, Abego, who they say Musa giving us 2 goals. That's Pigeon, you know. Abego gather here for selfie. Thank you very much, Ehoza Godwin.
And of course, now moving to women issues, which are getting more exposure and platforms for discussion. This is according to a survey carried out by the Thomson Reuters Foundation released, which ranked the most dangerous countries for women. And 3 African countries have made it to the top 10 list. Issues that were pinpointed by the survey were sexual violence, rape and human trafficking. Sonia Piotier compiled this report.
According to the carryout, with about 550 experts, Somalia ranked 4th, the Democratic Republic of Congo 7th, while Nigeria ranked 9th. The survey asks which 5 of the 193 United Nations member states were the most dangerous for women and the worst for healthcare, sexual abuse, as well as human trafficking. Zaina Mohamed Abubakar, editor with DW's Hausa, says that the issue affecting women in Nigeria depends on the regions.
We have cases of men abusing women all over Nigeria that I can vouch for. We also have cases of rape. But the most unfortunate one is a situation where you find men forcing themselves onto young girls.
In DRC, years of conflict and lawlessness, especially in rebel-controlled areas, have affected the living conditions of the population and women in particular, as explained by Nushka Tegzera, president of ASBL Matumaini, an association that works with young girls in DRC.
There are a lot of war zones in DRC. The situation is complicated. These abuses are destined to destroy the woman's body with the purpose of destroying the population. And in the capital city, Kinshasa, there's a lot of impunity. That is why women are getting raped.
In countries such as Nigeria, there are laws that defend victims, but the challenge is that women who are abused are often afraid to come forward and or to speak out for fear of being stigmatized.
Sonia Piotier with that report.
And of course, many of you have been sharing your thoughts with us on how African governments can make their countries much safer for women. To begin with, Glory Manku says, women are good managers. Let their voices be heard. The solution lies in the woman. Hashtag women emancipation. Women stand for Africa.
And Adirone Ebenezer says, women camped in northern IDPs are a victim of rape and other abuses.
Ona Chris Chuk says, that is just Africa where human rights are not recognized, where civilians are being mistreated, where girls are raped, but nobody to judge.
Yeah, Beduze Eric Yenika says, no, Cameroon is fast. Their military kills unarmed civilians in broad daylight.
Keep the debate flowing. We still have much for you coming on, but stay with us after this.
Focus Europe.
To the Democratic Republic of Congo, that has the biggest number of child soldiers, one of the world's biggest populations of child soldiers. UNICEF estimates up to 30,000 children are forced to serve armed groups as soldiers, sexual slaves and laborers. Michel Chikwanine was one of them, but he was lucky he escaped.
Now a refugee in Canada, Chikwanine is a student and peace campaigner educating audiences on the plight of child soldiers. Lisa Brand caught up with Chikwanine at a new international peace forum in the Norman city of Caen, not far from the D-Day beaches of World War II.
Michel Chikwanine is a long way from where he grew up in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, but not from the memories of war. They haunt him every night, ever since he was captured by rebels in the city of Beni at the age of 5. His father had imposed an early evening curfew, but Chikwanine disobeyed it to play soccer with his friends.
And it was during that time while we were playing when we saw a truck with military personnel racing towards the field. They surrounded the field and eventually grabbed all the kids and put us into a truck and drove away.
The militants drugged Chikwanine and the other kids, then trained them to use firearms. But that wasn't all.
And so I started to cry and I begged them again to let me go home. Instead, they forced me to kill someone. And they forced me to kill my best friend. And so at the age of 5, I was forced to kill my best friend as a way of being entered basically into the group. And I feel guilty sometimes of the fact that I survived and he didn't.
Chikwanine managed to escape, but more violence followed. His family became casualties of DRC's ongoing unrest that has killed and displaced millions over the past two decades.
My father was this giant man. He was 6'7". He was 250 pounds.
To date, Chikwanine talks about his experience to audiences around the world, including here in the northern French city of Caen. He was among international experts and leaders invited to the first edition of the Normandy World Peace Forum. The meeting, which included personalities like former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, aims to start conversations about global conflicts and ways to resolve them. That includes the use of child soldiers in dozens of countries in recent decades. Chikwanini's family fled to Uganda, but then his father died, apparently from poisoning. Soon after, the remaining family was granted asylum in Canada.
Our forces made substantial penetration.
Normandy is a good place to talk about child soldiers. Hundreds of thousands of troops died here during World War II. Most were barely out of their teens. In Chikwanine's native Congo, clerics are spearheading the fight for peace and demanding that long-delayed elections be held. Bishop Fulgence Muteba, who also attended the Normandy Peace Forum, is one of them. From his diocese in southern DRC, he's also tried to help former child soldiers.
Ce sont des enfants que j'ai vus traumatisés, psychologiquement abattus.
These were children who were traumatized psychologically and battered. They almost had no feelings. They were so familiar with violence that their lives were no longer worth living.
Chikwanine says even those who make it are forever scarred. He fears that in places like DRC, people have become accustomed to war as a way of life.
I don't think the Congo will change in my lifetime, for example, but at least if I can start the conversation and move it forward and you pass on the baton to somebody else, I think that's really what's needed. It's the love of country, the love of people that really will shift the Congolese narrative.
Very inspirational story there about Michel Chikwanine. And now we go to Ghana because the president has banned foreign trips for his ministers, local government officials and state agencies until further notice, which he says will help the country save money and ensure focus on domestic work. And we did ask on our Facebook page, can other African countries follow this trend?
Abu Kamara in Sierra Leone says, when our new president took over 2 months ago, this is among the many measures he has taken to save cost and build up the broken economy of our country. It is a good drive if other African nations can follow suit.
And another interesting one here from Aristotle Globe, who says, I wish this man is Nigeria's president. Ghana, could you lend us your president for a while and take Buhari? Thank you in advance.
Just like this one from Safari, who says, let them use YouTube to learn how things operate or use Skype to do video conferences. Interesting comments there,
for
you
sure.
Know. Of course, keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And from me, Isaac.
And Mizi Paranyambura.
Bye for now.